My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Breaking Bad, El Camino, and Better Call Saul.
Yeah, and this week we are talking about Madrigal. This episode was written by Vince Gilligan, directed by Michelle MacLaren, and it originally aired on July 22nd of 2012.
Yeah, this episode's great.
Yep.
This has so many just iconic, very good scenes in it. We're still place setting.
Yeah.
Season five, but this is a great place setting episode, I think.
Yeah, especially because this is like it's a handoff of point of view over to Mike.
And this kind of continues in the next episode. Mike heads are eating good in Breaking Bad right now.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're getting to see the ramifications, you know, of this. Gus did not do this alone.
Nope.
We're seeing the kind of corporate side of this, Madrigal Electromotive.
No.
This is under investigation from the DEA because it cooperated in the drug operation. They're the one who sold them those filters.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. And I like this because, you know, the world of Breaking Bad has been pretty small up to this point.
Yeah.
You know, pretty... geographically contained, let's say. You know, I think the furthest away you go is like the like Don Eladio's villa, right?
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, you know, American Southwest and New Mexico, and opening up in Germany, like, okay, we are pulling the, you know, we're showing the wider effect of this, especially because later on a big part of this is the blue meth is going to go global. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also giving lie to something that Gus says, or Walt says in this episode, where he's, if Gus can do it, we can do it. By showing the scale of what Gus did.
Right.
You know, like that is a ludicrous statement. and we know it, and Mike knows it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a source of a lot of fun tension.
Yes.
In this. Yeah. We also get one of the great villains, season five. We get Lydia. In this episode, who is, I think, one of the best jobs I've seen of a actress playing somebody to be unlikable. Like, you would not suffer to know a Lydia.
Oh God, no.
In real life, nobody could be around Lydia. Lydia's energy is just fucking poison. huge coworker energy of a certain stripe, but just like very, I don't know. I'm very off put by Lydia. I do not like Lydia.
Yeah.
In a good, you know, non-derogatory way.
Right. There's a certain amount of like class signifier to her that I think contributes to that. But like, a lot of it at the end, it just comes down to her constant low level of panic about everything.
You cannot be around that.
No, it's corrosive. Like
that is, yeah, it's really corrosive. It's very difficult to react to. It's hard for me to ignore. I guess.
Yeah.
So she's very twitchy, nervous. She was Gus's chemical supplier. And because she's freaking out so much, this is going to put pressure on Mike.
Right.
Between this episode and the next one, we're getting Mike back in the gang.
Yes. Because of his guys. They were Gus's employees, but they were my guys.
loves guys. Hungry. Mike's hungry boys.
I didn't realize this. So her main scene in this episode, the scene at the diner, Laura Fraser, the actress who plays Lydia, that was her audition piece. And also that whole 9-scene page was her first day on the set.
That's great.
Good job, Lydia. This is so much.
That's a lot. Yeah. Good job, Lydia.
Yeah.
While this is happening, Walt is trying to set up again.
Yeah.
Mike does not want to get involved because Walt fucking sucks.
Yes. Especially now.
Man, Walt got so much worse between seasons. I forgot how stark it was. On this rewatch, like, you know, I've talked about it, but you know, the end of season four, the last time you could feel any sympathy for Walt, part of that is just circumstances, but part of it is because he's so fucking gross now. Like, and there's always the argument, like, oh, he's always that gross. He's not always that gross.
Yeah,
that simply isn't true. Like, we've been doing a rewatch of it. He is way more off-putting and hubristic and nasty. Now, like, there's no sympathy possible.
Yes.
For him.
Yeah. And also, like, you can't say that he is being played the same way either, right?
Yes.
Like, you know, if somebody could say, oh, he's always been this bad, like, well, Cranston has made a choice for there to be a Cranston and whoever else, you know, worked with him on this, made the choice for there to be such a hard kind of turn, right?
It's a very distinct change.
Yes.
You know, and not least of which, because the first three episodes of the season end with him abusing Skylar.
Yeah.
Like, they just had to remind you of it. Like, uh-huh. It doesn't happen very much during the episode. We just get to make sure at the end of the episode, he's kind of horrible to Skylar.
Yeah.
And it happens multiple times in a row here just to set things up.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of funny. Like, it's not good. It's not good behavior, but it kind of made me laugh when we ended there again and again.
Right.
For this. Weird little Easter egg. In Madrigal, they had a bunch of fast food concerns. And one of them is a Burgertron, automatic burger.
It's Burgermatic, I think it is.
Burgermatic. From the 1998 Drew Barrymore, Luke Wilson romantic comedy, Home Fries, which Vince Gilligan wrote.
A real popcorn classic.
Yeah, that is the most popcorn classic. I did have a brief moment of like, should I watch Home Fries?
Probably not.
And then I was like, no.
That's an insane person's thing to say. I like Luke Wilson. I think he is my preferred Wilson in front of the camera.
Sure.
Yeah. And Drew Barrymore is good. I don't need to watch that. I don't have to do that.
It doesn't matter who's in it. It's a romantic comedy from 1998 and it's called Home Fries. it's just a disqualifying premise. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how you know more about fries. can't watch a fry movie.
Well, sorry. If you're not going to take fries, will you take tater tots?
I will always take tots. Yeah. One of the best cold opens in the history of TV, I think.
Oh, Erich Schuller.
Yes. Almost there. No screen time, but like so well realized. And his toady. I love both of these characters so much.
German Milhouse.
Yeah, German Milhouse. He looks a little bit like, what's his head? Stephen Merchant. A
little bit, yeah.
Like German Stephen Merchant.
Yeah.
So this is a tater tot, like a sauce tasting session.
Mm-hmm.
Testing and tasting.
Yeah, it's a bunch of food scientists running this executive through the paces. All of the stuff that they have made, including Cajun Kick-Ass and French.
Yeah, French and French. Good Argentine French. Like, I love when English sneaks into a foreign language.
Uh-huh.
There's not really a word for French.
Yeah.
Weirdly, this is based on a comedy sketch that Vince Gilligan, or comedy premise.
Yeah, yeah.
Vince Gilligan had written about, and when his quotes about it make it sound like he had a French movie in him.
Uh-huh.
Like, there was going to be a French series of films.
Yeah.
And then, he's like, yeah, I just decided to dust that off. I just thought it was really funny. And I was like, what?
How much juice do you thought?
How much runway was there in France?
I gotta figure out a way to make money off of this.
The Home Fries, the Dip Chronicles.
French from the Book of Home Fries.
Yeah. What are you doing, man? I just really like fries. But yeah, it's very cute. And then a bunch of fun food scientist stuff. Like, we replaced the thing that was causing gastric distress, stuff like that. You know, we've replaced honey with corn syrup. 2% to get a little bit more money. And he's just eating tots.
Uh-huh.
Staring. He's not commenting or expressing any joy in the tots.
Just blank-eyed. And, ketchup. That last one is essentially just ketchup. Mm-hmm. And then, he pushes the sauce away, pulls the fishbowl of tots close. And then just, dead eyes staring off in the distance like a World War I veteran. Just dully eating these tots. Unresponsive to anything.
A woman comes in. And says, hey, the authorities are here for you. They're back again. There are three of them this time.
Mm-hmm.
So he walks out. And we don't really know what's going on, but the audience did not necessarily know what this was.
Mm-hmm.
He walks back past these fast food signs until he sees the Pollos Hermanos sign that's being taken down and kind of put together. He sees the police waiting in this conference room for him, looking at a photo of him and Fring.
Mm-hmm.
So he locks himself in his executive bathroom after grabbing an AED, automatic electric defibrillator.
Yes. And goes in there and inside, again, kind of mechanically, almost like ritualistically, strips off his shirt, strips the leads off of one of the wires, puts it in his mouth, sticks the other one to his chest, sits on the toilet as the police are pounding on the door.
Yeah.
And electrocutes himself with this.
And defribs himself.
Yeah.
There's a parallel here with Gus taking off his jacket.
Mm-hmm.
Like him doing the dignified jacket takeoff in the mirror.
Yeah.
Before killing himself here. What a way to go.
Yeah.
As well.
God, just the physicality of that, just like, you know, zap and then him pitching forward. It looks like the actor like genuinely like took a face first dive into a tile floor.
Yeah. It's really nasty looking. Yeah. And then the toilet flushes as a little beat. He is suicided.
Yes.
Rather than face the consequences of this.
Right. Rather than face down criminal commissar Schunst.
Schunst. The criminal commissar Schunst. God, I love the German language. So we hear a recorded conversation here between Jesse and Walt talking about the ricin.
Yeah.
You know, it's literally keeping Jesse up at night. Like, what if a kid finds it?
Yeah.
You know, I keep going through it. I didn't drop it at the lab. That doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
And Walt sees this as a problem to be solved. He makes a new ricin cigarette using salt, and the violin makes a fake.
Yes.
And he says, listen, I'll come over and we'll look for the cigarette together.
Mm-hmm. And when he goes to flush the real ricin before he heads over, he figures, well, why would I throw away an asset? Made this for a reason. He takes it and he stows it behind the outlet cover in the main bedroom. Like he tapes it to the back of the cover there.
The writer is playing another little trick on themselves.
Yes.
Like, now how are we going to use the ricin?
Mm-hmm.
So we get this montage of Walt and Jesse tearing the house apart.
Yeah.
And it's real silly. Like, they're looking inside couch cushions.
Yeah.
And stuff. Like, it just wormed its way in there for warmth.
Uh-huh.
You know? And there's tons of kid stuff around.
Yeah.
This place. It is full of kid things until eventually, as they sit down and take a break, the camera draws attention to the Roomba.
Mm-hmm.
The Roomba scoots across the floor.
Well, it's like, what the hell is that?
It's looking for food. Yeah, you're hungry. Mm-hmm. And Jesse goes, no, I've already checked it a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Walt goes, oh, a week ago? Well, you know, and he empties it out and finds the ricin cigarette.
Yes.
Inside.
Yeah.
And it's rough. This is a rough scene. You know, Walt and Jesse are technically getting along here.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Walt has deceived Jesse. Jesse is freaking out.
Yeah.
You know, he starts weeping about this.
Well, Walt cheerfully asks for a beer.
Yeah. He's like, you got a beer around here? This is all taken care of. And Jesse's like, I almost shot you.
Uh-huh.
They almost killed you because I fucked up. You know, a misunderstanding.
And Walt's just letting Jesse twist himself up around this. You know, as he's like, I don't know what's wrong with me, Mr. White. I don't know how I could be so stupid. You know, it's just talking through his tears. Like, it's the worst.
He can't assuage him without giving up the game.
Oh, absolutely. But you know, he doesn't even jump in to like stop. It's almost like he like stops to savor the regret about it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it was stupid of you to try and shoot me, even though you had every reason in the world to believe that I did the thing that you thought I did.
You know, eventually he lets him off the hook.
Yeah.
You know, he says, listen, whatever happened for the best. I wouldn't change anything. It was us sticking together, saving each other's lives.
Yeah.
And I want you to think about that as we go forward. And Jesse goes, wait, go forward where?
Yeah. This is news to Jesse.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck? We cut over to Mike at home watching the Kane Mutiny, which is very well observed.
Yes. Like, I just, man, all of Mike's, like, you know, just in his little old man house watching his old man movies on his shitty TV. It's so good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Nursing his gut wound, and Walt and Jesse show up.
Yes.
To have a meeting. They're going to talk about a three-way partnership.
Right.
You know, Jesse and Walt will handle production. Mike would handle all of distribution and logistics.
Right. Yeah. We figure we should start cooking again. Why not? It's like, why not? Yeah. And Mike rejects this. You know, he wasn't really able to contain himself or barely contain himself. You know, as Walt
thank
was.
You. No.
Right.
Because
you are trouble. I'm sorry the kid here can't see it. But I sure as hell do. You're a time bomb. Tick, tick, ticking. And I have no intention of being around for the boom.
Yeah. And Walt is so confident at this point. Mm-hmm. He says, you know, sleep on it.
Yeah.
You know, in the meantime, we're pressing on. Walt stands and forces him to shake his hand.
Right.
Basically hold his hand out. He would never shake his hand, but Jesse's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just like, this will get this motherfucker out of my kitchen.
Right.
You know, as a thing. This is interesting because the way that Walt talks about it, like, you'll come around.
Mm-hmm.
As a thing, he doesn't have any idea about the reasons Mike is going to come around. And when he eventually finds out the reasons, he doesn't give a shit.
No,
It's in his head. He's just coming around because he's like, man, Walt's great.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to hang out with Walt more. That guy's going to give me a lot of money. Walt's cool.
Yeah. Cut over to the DEA. Hank is showing up because there is a conference with the, you know, the German Madrigal executives who are in town. Yes. And the kind of, you know, the leader here, the grandson of the founder of the company, Mr. Herzog, puts everything on Schuller. You know, an innocent man does not kill himself. You know, we will cooperate with the investigation because, though I believe it was, you know, the act of a blown, corrupt person, I want to find out just as much as you.
Yeah, he's very specifically not being crapulent here. He's not shunting responsibility. Mm-hmm. His lawyer is saying, like, don't admit to anything. He's like, no.
Yeah,
like, he definitely did it. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get past that. We're going to cooperate with everything. I believe he's being super sincere during this.
And Lydia has bugs crawling up and down her skin. Yeah.
Lydia's just dying on the inside. Yeah. We go to the Isaac Merkitz office. He pours some drinks, and he's taking the fall.
Mm-hmm.
He, you know, good police work. I should have listened to you in the first place, Hank. Yeah. You know? And he they kind of shoot the shit a little bit, a little small talk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, whatever happened with that laptop?
Yeah.
You know, with the APD, the electromagnet. He's like, you know, they fried it, but I took a look at it anyway, and it's completely encrypted. I wouldn't have gotten anything from that.
Right. Which
anyway,
I remember during, you know, when people were watching Live Free or Die, it was, you know, they were like, oh, just Gus would encrypt that. There's no reason for them to do this.
Yeah.
This is way too wacky. This is too much.
Yes. Well, it ultimately, it's a little bit of a, almost like a season two Magnolia thing, where if they hadn't done anything, they wouldn't have revealed the bank accounts,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the electromagnet's the thing that broke the picture frame
mm-hmm.
that showed the bank accounts, which allowed them to look into the money.
Yeah.
You know, like, they kind of fucked themselves up with this. Like, Walt is a chicken with his head cut off.
Absolutely.
All this shit. Yeah. Thinks he knows everything.
Yeah. And there was no way to know for sure that it was encrypted.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Isaac says, oh, you know, Hector Salamanca killed Gus Fring. We still don't know who gave him the item.
I just woke up.
I do not believe brakes to be an effective demotivator. who gave Hector the bomb?
Uh-huh.
You know, and they're like, you know, we don't know. Gomi brings up that financial information.
Right.
They're going to follow the money.
Yes. You know, and the ASAC is like, you know, he's probably a couple mugs of whiskey in, and he's like, you know, just says, like, you know, I had Gus over for a cookout. Like, I still do the trick when I'm grilling fish of making a little pouch.
Yeah, a little garlic pouch.
Yeah. And, you know, we spent the whole night laughing, and it turns out he's somebody else completely, right in front of me, right under my nose. And the camera just, like, rack focuses to Hank.
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
We have Mike, a good comedy beat. Mike mm-hmm. is at a diner when Lydia walks in, and she's trying to disguise herself. She sits in the booth behind him, you know, and there's a real, like, am I coming to you or are you coming to me? And she says, you know, oh, it'd probably be better if we didn't face each other. He goes, I'm coming to you. Mike's not going to do this bullshit.
It's such a, like, a little kid's idea of what being covert is.
Yes.
You know, it's a, I mean, it's almost like a, it's like an echo of, meeting Tuco in the junkyard.
It's like,
I don't know, maybe the mall, maybe Taco Bell.
The people who actually do this shit understand that, like, the most conspicuous thing you can do is try to be inconspicuous in this way.
Yes.
Yeah. It's really good.
The waitress comes over, and Lydia goes into this script that she has, you know, this is not the kind of restaurant that she, you know, is ever in, you know, and just, you know, trying to, you know, say, like, oh, do you have chamomile? No, we don't have chamomile. Well, any kind of bergamot, especially not Earl Grey. It's like, no. Eventually comes down to, we have Lipton. So, like, might as well have just said, oh, you could maybe take a drink out of the toilet if you wanted to.
This scene makes me want to step on Lydia's neck. I just, like, come on. I feel for this waitress. And also just, like, know your venue.
Uh-huh.
You horrible, horrible crone. So she gets a cup of hot water with lemon. And she's like, I assume you don't have stevia. I brought my own. And, like, stevia, a cup of hot water with lemon in it with a whole packet of stevia would taste like Kool-Aid that toddlers wished into existence, like Kool-Aid for toddlers that it's not sweet enough for them.
Uh-huh.
Like, stevia is so fucking sweet.
Yeah, yeah.
And just having it in hot water, like,
yeah.
Good Lord. Like, you know, and they're doing that. I don't know how intentional this is, this idea that, like, she thinks she's of high taste, but she's actually just drinking, like, syrup, you know, Heinberg water.
Uh-huh.
But yeah.
Yeah.
Mike comes over. He's, you know, he's, listen, you're safe. You know, mm-hmm. you are safe. You don't have to worry about this.
Mm-hmm.
The waitress comes back, and she goes, like, oh, it's so good to see you, Dwayne. I can't believe you're here.
Uh-huh.
And the waitress looks at it and goes, do you want anything else, Mike? Like, it's really good.
Oh my God. It's so funny. You know, and she asks, like, you know, who killed Gus? You know, because she doesn't know. She doesn't know about Walt yet. You know, she even says, like, you know, I have no idea who your cook is. You know, Mike says, you know, told you before, don't worry about it. And this is when Lydia produces the list. These 11 names, you know, Mike's guys, people that he vetted who were, you know, very publicly part of the Poyos organization, but who also know everything. You know, like the manager of the laundromat. Yeah.
Yeah. Chow. You know, things like that. And I love this this what's happening here. She's doing the same thing Mike is saying, you know, you want me to kill these 11 people.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes, no, you know, nobody who said anything about that. That is what she wants. This is Shades of Walt. This is Walt being like, I set a device.
Yes.
You know, and I love Mike's, listen, you know, I know you're upset and scared. So I'm going to factor that into my response.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to fucking flip out on you because I understand. You know, these are my guys. They're solid. They got paid to shut their mouth, you know, keep their mouth shut.
Yeah.
And then he applies pressure a little bit. Look at me and say, you understand.
Right.
You know, I don't want to hear any more about this fucking list.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So he gets it to leave, puts a 20 on the table, and says, drink your hot water.
Yep. The so Walt, we cut over to the White House. Walt sends Junior off to school. Skylar is still in bed. He goes to wake her up, and she says she's not going to work today.
Yeah.
You know, he basically forces her to get up and take a shower. She's in a deep depression fugue.
Right. So Mike is called in, you know, to the DEA, and crosses paths with Chow. Remember the, you know, the guy who ran the warehouse.
Yes.
You know, Mike shot him through the hand, right? He crosses paths with him in the, you know, in the lobby. I love Chow wearing his American flag tie. It's like, ah, shit, I gotta go, like, do the patriotic act.
There's like a really great little power play here too, because Chow is like, you know, the DEA talked to me. He's like, yeah, they do that. And Chow starts lighting up a cigarette. And Mike just looks at him and goes, you can't smoke in here, Chow. And he just doesn't do it. Like, he knows he can't smoke in there, but he doesn't do it because of Mike is there. Mike is exerting very subtle pressure on him, trying to keep control of this.
Yes.
Jonathan Banks is a fucking treasure.
God.
Like, he's capable of a lot.
He is.
Like, being the most badass person in the world, but these kind of subtle, like, you know, subconscious, almost like body language pressures he's putting to corral his guys are really good.
Yeah. So, you know, Mike goes in and sits down with Hank and Gomez, who are being real smug about all this, asks him the questions, you know, so what is it that you did for, you know, for Frang, you know, corporate security, background checks and loss prevention. Yes, it's a full-time job. We have 14 locations and, you know, going through this, you know, long list of places where he's licensed to operate as a private investigator, you know, listing off and you're like, oh, it would be quicker if I list the places where I don't have a concealed carry permit.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And Hank says, you know, you strike me as a former cop, you know, and they looked it up. He used to be in the Philadelphia PD. And he's like, why would Gus choose a guy like you for corporate security? You know? And Gomi kind of plays the card here, says, listen, we have a witness who can place you in the lab.
Yep.
And Mike, playing it cool as a cucumber, puts out his handcuffs, you know? Oh, I'm sorry. Did you forget your cuffs? Am I under arrest? Because if not, I'd prefer to leave.
Yeah.
And he thinks he's played them.
Right.
You know, completely. He gets up to go.
Yeah. But he doesn't know about the picture frame. And as he's getting ready to leave, Hank's, you know, brings up, well, so I guess, you know, you don't want to talk about the $2 million that we found in the name of your 10-year-old granddaughter.
Yep. It says we got the 12 accounts on these guys and everything. We don't have proof of you touching the money, so we can make this easy for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but somebody else is going to flip.
Yeah.
And he, you know, he thinks about it. He says, you know, he doesn't accept the deal. You know, I don't know anything about any money. I don't know what you're talking about. But as he leaves, the camera pushes in on his face and he's fucking furious. Like, he breaks when he has his back.
Yes.
Turn to them. This is a huge pain in his ass.
Yeah.
He needs his sleep.
Yeah. Like, he just had to say goodbye to you know, $2 million, the entire reason he was doing any of this. You know,
and, just, you know, he finds out information. They know all of, they have all the accounts
right
and stuff.
Yeah.
So sets him into action.
Mm-hmm. So Walt is leading meeting at Saul's place, discussing next steps. You know, they need to find a place to cook that is not an RV. And Jesse, who is, you know, nostalgia for those days, says, I don't know, the crystal ship served us well.
Love the crystal ships.
Walt,
crystal
Walt ships. Didn't know that Jesse was calling it the crystal ship.
It's great. And Walt's like, you know, I want somewhere in town. I don't want to have to drive 50 miles.
Uh-huh.
I'm not willing to do an hour commute for this incredibly risky thing. And Saul's like, that's going to be tough. And, you know, he says, if Gus can manage, so can we.
Yeah.
And again, that's, you know, tied to the opening scene. Like Gus had international connections.
There are three seasons of a completely other show about how difficult it was to dig that fucking hole.
Yes. The hole is a multi-season arc.
Yeah.
The Germany arc. Yeah. This is just Walt that is absolutely most egotistical and crappy. Mm-hmm. You know, next up, methylamine. You know, they got everything. You know, mm-hmm. Jesse able to get everything except for the methylamine.
Right.
And, you know, he's like, can we go back to a pseudo cook? And Walt, you know, absolutely not. There mm-hmm. has to be methylamine out there. Just apply yourself.
Yeah.
You know, does teacher pressure on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, Saul volunteers a thought saying, hey, listen, guy who wins the lottery doesn't go out and buy another ticket right away. Right.
Yeah.
You should quit while you're ahead. You know, making the point that, like, you danced with the devil and won.
Yes. You dodged a big time bullet. You lived.
Yeah.
And Walt says, how exactly did I win the lottery? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm absolutely broke. In fact, I'm 40 grand in the hole.
Yeah.
And there's gold in the street. Like, I have this skill. It'd be stupid not to take it.
Yeah.
You know, and he is broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of, like, anything that could make you understand why Walt does anything he does, mm-hmm. being $40,000 in debt.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of get it. That, you know, getting some money for his family is the whole point. He can't give that up. I'm curious as to what a articulated version of this that's still... Instead of having Walt turn into like, I'm Gus now, I'm Gus Tracy,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just getting all of Gus's powers and confidence, what a version would be like, fuck, I'm fucked. Like, I'm broke. Uh-huh. I have to do this.
Yes.
You know, I don't think it would be a proper escalation. I'm not saying I like that better.
No. Yeah.
But it's another possible character motivation mm-hmm. for what happens.
Yeah. So it leaves it there. And Mike and Kaylee are at his house playing Hungry, Hungry Hippos.
Mm-hmm.
Just completely adorable. And Mike gets a call from Chow.
Yes. The DEA called him back in and they've taken all of his money. He says, we need to talk, but I don't want to talk on the phone. We have to talk in person.
Yeah.
And Chow hangs up and we see that there's a hitman pointing a gun at him.
Yeah.
And Mike knows exactly what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Mike is not no idiot. He shows up 2 hours later and he has this little toy there. He walks up to the door. The hitman has the pistol to the peephole. We don't see what Mike does. He ties the toy to the door.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. This little thing is undulating in front of the peephole. When you look out the peephole, something's happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's like really hard to see exactly what's happening. And he's using this time to sneak around.
Yes.
To get in through the back.
Another entry in the Kindergarten MacGyver Chronicles.
Yes.
Of Mike.
With the balloon.
Yep.
Yeah. Love it. Everything Mike needs to take down anybody. Can be found in an average kindergarten.
Oh yeah, an average nursery. Yeah, there's looking at five different ways to kill you right now.
There's a deleted scene where he uses one of those alphabet blocks,
mm-hmm.
And it's absolutely brutal.
It goes up the guy's urethra.
Yeah, yeah, it goes through them the hard way.
So you know, gets behind him, and the hitman is another one of Mike's guys, right?
Yep, Chris.
Chris. Yeah, and. He tells us, you know, okay, go, you know, sit down next to Chow. And the camera kind of cranes back and cranes down. I love this shot. It's so fucking menacing because, like, oh, go sit down next to Chow. We haven't heard from Chow. Chow's sitting there and we see the back of his head blown out. And as the camera comes down, we can hear the flies. He's not only dead, he's been dead for a while.
And the guy doesn't sit next to Chow. Like, this is one of those, you know, those things. He sits in another chair
mm-hmm.
and he goes, how much did Lydia offer you? Like, he knows what's up.
Yes.
You know, it was 10K per. 30K for you. Listen, Mike, you know, my money was taken away. I didn't have a choice. And Mike goes, I know. And, mm-hmm. Are you ready? And he tries to get him to stop and he shoots him four times with his silenced pistol.
Yep.
Yep.
New crime scene to clean up.
Yep.
So
we cut over. I love this scene. Cut over to nighttime with Lydia's house. We have Lydia's nanny getting her daughter ready for bed when Lydia gets home.
Mm-hmm.
And we see Mike in the foreground waiting in Lydia's bedroom.
Yeah, like solid snaking at the corner, listening in on this. And, you know, Lydia walks.
Even here, you want to step on Lydia's throat?
Yeah.
She's like, oh, you're still up. And the nanny's like, oh, she insisted on waiting for you. And she goes, mm-hmm. well, who's the adult here? to the nanny. And like, fucking Lydia's got to go. Like, I'm so glad she gets bison poisoned.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot suffer a Lydia.
No, not at all.
Who's the adult here? Get fucked. Like, your daughter wants to stay up and see you because she loves you. Uh-huh. What are you trying to skip? This is what life is. This is why you're here.
Yeah. So Lydia walks back, and the nanny is still here. Like, yes. Mike grabs her, you know, and you know, gets her in a hole and says, do whatever it takes to keep them out of here or else they die. You know, the nanny and her daughter.
Yeah. He says, you know, mom's going to take a bath, go ahead and put her to bed. And you know, there's a couple little close calls as they're approaching, but she convinces them.
Yes.
And then Mike puts a gun to her. And she says, she starts bargaining, like, don't hurt my daughter.
Yeah.
Like, I won't have to unless you scream. You know, do you have anything to say for yourself? And she's resigned to this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't shoot me in the face.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want my daughter to find me like that. And he goes, no one's going to find you.
Yeah.
And this is the wrong thing to say.
Yes. This is even worse than, you know, the idea of either dying or having the daughter walk in on the body. The idea that, you know, my daughter can't live the rest of her life thinking that I abandoned her.
Yes. I just disappeared. I don't want to be a mystery. Mm-hmm. They argue and she's getting increasingly louder.
Yes.
You know, he's saying, you know, be quiet, lower your voice. And she says, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I can't do this. The nanny eventually leaves and she says, you know, promise I don't disappear. You have to promise me. He's not bargaining. He's thinking he is bargaining. He's not necessarily sympathetic to this. I think that he is just working out his problems.
Yes.
And seeing a solution here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't want her to scream, obviously, because he doesn't want to hurt the girl, but also like, this is an opportunity. He's kind of fucked. He has, you know, hitmen coming after him.
Yeah.
And people are breaking.
Yeah. Lydia's dead. She could be a resource.
Yes. You know, similar to the ricin, you know, and Mike says, hey, can you still get your hands on methylamine?
Yep.
You know, and later he calls Walt to say he's in and Walt goes, good. You know, you came around. I knew you would, Mr. Ermentrout.
and feeling his oats, Walt goes back to the bedroom where Skylar is continuing to bed rot. Mm-hmm. You know, and, you know, kind of like just talks to her very calmly, you know, and he's facing away from the camera and we are seeing Skylar just lying there on her side. Oh, you know, like away from him, her face just, you know, horrified, you know, and he just calmly says, you know, it gets easier. I promise it does. What you're feeling right now about Ted, everything, it'll pass.
Yeah. And she doesn't respond. And then again, we just to remind us that he's fucking a supervillain now. He gets into bed and starts kissing her, you know, from behind. And she's just frozen.
Yes.
You know, in fear. And he finishes by saying, you know, when we do what we do for good reasons, then we've got nothing to worry about. And there's no better reason than family. And it's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is meant to be revulsive. And it does. It repulses the shit out of you.
Yeah. Don't like it.
Yeah.
Lizard Walt.
Nasty.
Sucks.
Yep. Yep. Super gross Walt. In rewatching this time and seeing how suddenly that kind of happens, like it literally happens between seasons.
Yep.
You know, I do kind of, even if he's not going to be sympathetic this season, I do wonder if this season was originally as planned, whether this would have been more or less gradual.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they would have had fewer episodes, but the original plan might have had, you know, things would have been moved around.
Yeah.
I almost wish this was a little bit more gradual because it does just really feel like it's like the kind of thing you act like after you do something, like you win, you get on this high, which is persisting. He's never coming down and having a moment of like actually trying to figure out how other people might be feeling, which is not his strength in the first place, but he didn't not do it ever.
Yeah.
You know, you have to do that to manipulate people to a degree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I don't know. And it's a stark contrast because once Hank figures things out, you know, basically like this is Walter as he exists in the first half of this season, right?
Yes.
Once Hank figures it out, it's almost immediately like, you know, another flip. Like, yes, he is still crapulent for like a couple of episodes, but, you know, then
it all crumbles Ozymandias. Down. Yeah, Ozymandias is to him, you know, and that, then they're building him up so that can happen.
Yes.
I think that part of just from a structural standpoint, the thing that makes this feel a little bit odd to me is that having a check-in, we get to see that he's still being shitty to Skylar, you know, would make sense, but we just keep doing it.
Yeah.
You know, it feels a little like rubbing our face in it. And like, maybe that is the, maybe that's the intent. You know, never forget this, but if there's anybody still cheering for Walt at this point, I don't know who you fucking are. You know, I don't need to be reminded that this guy fucking sucks.
Right.
You know, I don't know. It feels a little bit odd to me. It's not bad by any means. It just, there's something I can't quite explain.
It's also like, I don't know. It's hard to say like, okay, how is this intended to be seen? Because I think by this point, like the binging model was absolutely still, you know, was absolutely a factor there. But like ending these episodes with Skylar abuse, you know, just like a little check-in, you know, once a week feels different than if you're watching them back to back, kind of like we did, you know. Talking about them and drawing attention to it. It's still really sudden, and there's a bunch of other stuff that kind of goes along with it. You know, his cockiness and the way that he's like riding high in a saddle and looking over everything like it's his fucking kingdom, right?
Yes.
I wonder if this suffers a little bit from the concentration as well.
I think that could be the case for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Great episode. Tons of iconic scenes. One of my favorite cold opens in the history of TV.
Yep.
And both of the big mic scenes here, the Lydia scene and the scene at Chow's are both like all timers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. What can they do?
What you can do is you can, if you're listening to this when the episode is out and it's Saturday, tune into Duckstream, duckfeed.tv/duckstream. We're raising money for a good cause for Transactive Gender Project. You're probably listening to this a little bit afterward though. So thank you if you did. And if you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and, support us, support this show, support the network.
Yeah. Appreciate it. It is because of your support. We have time to do, you know, this show. I know a lot of people like it. We like it. Mm-hmm. It's not, doesn't do numbers, you know, in a big, big bad way. We can do this because of the Patreon.
Yes.
So we're able to kind of do these little flights of fancy. Mm-hmm. And we appreciate that. Also, please leave us ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts, anywhere you find podcasts, and join us and thank your producer, Gwen.
Thank you, Gwen.
Yeah. Until next time, step on Lydia's neck.
Just a little. Just, yeah, no, actually a lot.